The Progressive Radio News Hour with Stephen Ledman, Thursdays at 11 a.m. and weekends at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. Let me again wish my listeners a happy holiday weekend we're coming up on. I'd also stress that news never goes away. Holidays don't stop the news from coming. The major issues never going away. This program absolutely is committed to staying on them and to presenting them. And we will have two marvelous guests scheduled for the weekend, James Fetzer on Saturday, John Cozy on Sunday. They'll offer fresh perspective on major issues that we always discuss. So I hope listeners, it may be a holiday weekend, I hope listeners will tune in. And if you can't listen live, you can listen archived anytime. I imagine people will have a few other things on their mind, especially on Sunday, Christmas Day. But the material will be there, and the following week it'll be up in archives, and you'll be able to hear it very, very easily. It's brand new material, not repeats, so do tune in. Today my guest is Mohammed Marandi. Mohammed is an associate professor at the University of Tehran. He also chairs the North American Studies Department, and he is very, very well focused on issues going on in the Middle East. I certainly spent enough of my time on them on this program and in articles I write, so I'm very eager to get Mohammed's views. He's there. He's on the scene. I'm not. I'm far away, so my view is from a distance, and he is seeing it very close up. Mohammed, I welcome you to the program. I've been looking forward to today.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Where shall we turn first? We certainly see so much strife going on. The Obama administration supposedly pulled troops out of Iraq. I think of it as a repositioning of the troops. So they're building up in Kuwait. They're building up in other neighboring countries. I believe that the administration's plan, wherever they redeploy troops, is to add more forces, not reduce them in the region. We've also got Afghanistan. We've got the Libya situation. Maybe the NATO bombing stopped, but the conflict hasn't. There is still horrors going on the ground. You've got the externally generated insurgency, by my view, going on in Syria. And your country is also in the spotlight, in the target zone, let me put it that way, with the Saudi ambassador fiasco last October, the bogus claims. I say bogus because there's no evidence. Unless you can show the proof, the evidence is bogus that Iran is developing a nuclear bomb. One more comment on that, and I'll let you jump in and comment because I want to hear from you. I wrote several times on that issue alone, and I quoted from the U.S. intelligence estimate, the combined estimate of 16 U.S. intelligence agencies, the latest one, March 2011, no evidence whatever proves that Iran is developing a nuclear bomb. You know, they throw a little wrinkle in and say it doesn't mean they're not doing it, but we can't find any evidence to say they're doing it. Anyway, jump in on any one of those issues, Mohammed.
Well, there are quite a few, and I agree. I think that the United States really is has been causing itself a lot of trouble, especially after 9/11, in the sense that it has shifted its policy to a more aggressive one in the region, and which has costed the United States both financially. And it has also made the United States much more unpopular among many people. And the result is basically an Iraq that has been utterly destroyed. And right now, as U.S. troops, as you put it, withdraw or reposition themselves, we see that stability in Iraq is still non-existent. with the current crisis in governments that we're seeing just today. And the United States is basically now creating a situation for itself in which almost all the countries in the Middle East have the potential to become unstable. And for example, Syria, which is not a democratic regime, but the fact that the Americans, alongside the Saudis and the Qataris, are working against the Syrian government is creating a form of instability, and it's increasing extremism in the country, the sort of extremism that existed in Afghanistan. In other words, Saudi Arabia and the Qataris, they're both dictatorships. If Syria is a dictatorship, they're even worse. But the Saudis and the Qataris, they follow Salafism. They're Salafists. And that is the same sort of ideology, or it's similar to the ideology of Al-Qaeda, as well as the Taliban. Now, what we're seeing through this unholy alliance between the United States and the Saudis is the growth of this form of extremism in Syria. And we all recall what happened in Afghanistan when the American government supported Taliban-like people. At the end of the day, you had 9/11, which was, you know, blowback. In Libya, you see the same thing. The American government, the Europeans, aligned themselves not with moderate Muslim or Sunni forces, but with extremist figures, such as Al-Qaeda, who was an Al-Qaeda, close to Al-Qaeda. So the problem is that not only is the American policy in the Middle East misguided, but the Americans, in order to confront their opponents, whether it's Iran or Syria, they are using the most dangerous of people as their allies. And therefore, they're helping to promote an extremism that at the end of the day will come back to haunt them.
Mohammed, I certainly agree. And on the one hand, America needs enemies to be able to pursue its aggressive policy. America literally has a permanent war policy, and they're waging direct or proxy wars against one or more nations virtually always. And it's so destructive, and I noted on a recent program that at least since the 1980s, each successive U.S. administration, and I combined the senior Bush one with the Reagan administration, so call that a 12-year period, but each successive U.S. administration has bettered the worst of the previous one. So Clinton was worse than Reagan Bush Sr., and Bush, too, was worse than Clinton, and Obama, so far, in my judgment, is worse than Bush, too. And I imagine, unless you never know what can happen in the next year, but to say he's an odds-on favorite for re-election, I think, is a gross understatement. I don't see any legitimate Republican candidate unless a new one pops up. I have a feeling maybe the Republicans want him to win so he can stumble through the economic morass that's only going to get worse over the next few years, maybe over the next year alone. And the administration that follows Obama will be worse than him if humanity survives, Mohammed, to get to that point. That's what I worry about. I mean, these wars that are being waged, and along with the Middle East and Central Asian countries, we have hostility against Russia, mostly because of its military strength. China, also a military power, but not the same as Russia, because Russia has a huge nuclear arsenal. China's is much smaller. But I don't know how many of these things you need with the right delivery system to do enough damage to, you don't need to launch anymore. China may have a couple of hundred nuclear weapons. Russia and America between them have something like 97% of all the nuclear weapons and the same kinds of delivery systems to strike anywhere. But China is the growing economic power, so America targets them for that reason. I mean, I just can't imagine. And they have interests in the Middle East, Mohammed. And you know, if America goes after Syria more intensively, another Libya war, and then targets Iran with the same thing, well, Russia and China have interests in the region. Will they sit back and let this happen and do nothing? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I agree in the sense that that Obama has turned out to be worse than Bush, in the sense that people in the region, not everyone, many were skeptical from the start, but many people in the region, and I think outside of the Middle East as well, were willing to give him a chance, to a large degree because of some of the things that he said, to an extent because he was African American, and they and many saw him as perhaps hoping that he would better understand the injustices that are brought about by the United States, because after all, ordinary Americans really know very little about what's going on outside of the United States. The mainstream media is very one-sided, very biased. I mean, if I was an ordinary American living in the United States, listening, watching CNN or Fox News, I would probably believe that American foreign policy was reasonable. But people in the region see, you know, the reality. They see much more than that which the corporate media allows people in America to see. But they did give him the benefit of the doubt. And the fact that he failed to use this opportunity in any way or form, I think is a huge, not only huge injustice to the United States and American people, but I think it really creates a sort of hopeless situation, because in the future, any U.S. president who comes to power, people will look upon them with skepticism. No one will have the sort of opportunity that Obama had. I also think that the problem really isn't nuclear weapons as much as it is general chaos. If the United States continues to push in the direction that it seems to be pushing, you could have regional wars. And as you know quite well, most of the world's energy comes from the Middle East, and Central Asia. And if there is war, let's say in the Persian Gulf, for whatever reason, I mean, there's no doubt that oil and gas exports from the region will halt, will end immediately. And they won't start up for a very long time, because you will have, it won't just be the Strait of Hormuz that will be closed. It'll be tankers, they'll be hit, oil and gas installations will be destroyed. I mean, war, that's the nature of war. And if that happens, in this current economic situation where the United States and Europe are in crisis and the whole world is concerned about the future, if you have suddenly this crisis with energy, then I think that you will have a very scary future awaiting all of us. With social instability, with social tensions at all levels in all parts of the world. So I think if that happens, then who knows what could happen if central governments grow weaker, the nuclear weapons that are being held, for example, by the government of Pakistan or India or other countries throughout the world, whether these central governments will be able to control their military facilities and installations like they do now. So the major problem, I think, is that the American government is driving the region towards war, and hopefully that won't happen, but there is a danger.
It really is a danger. My fear of nuclear weapons, Mohammed, isn't that even though America literally has a first strike nuclear policy, including against non-nuclear states, I doubt it would be used. My fear is that it could happen by accident. We had mutually assured destruction preventing Soviets and Americans from facing off. But still, we had a close call in 1962 over the Cuban Missile Crisis that we literally came, we didn't know until many years later, but we came within an eyelash of a nuclear war, and it would have been an accidental one. That's my fear on nuclear weapons. I simply can't believe that Obama or the Pentagon generals would be crazy enough to launch this stuff. And certainly the Russians don't want to do it. I mean, we're talking about potential Armageddon. I've written about nuclear winter. I mean, it is no joke. It could happen. But you never know what can happen by accident. I also agree that, my goodness, if a war breaks out, and we're talking about Syria and Iran this time, one or the other or both, it's a lot different than Libya. I mean, the Libya situation shut off the Libyan oil for most of 2011, or at least most of the oil for most of 2011. As you say, just imagine the oil from the Middle East being shut off for most of the year, and you start blowing up refineries and oil tankers, and Iran militarily and Syria militarily are certainly much, much more formidable than Gaddafi's Libya. I mean, they were a pushover militarily, but Iran certainly isn't, and Syria isn't. I mean, and you can really have a desperate situation, and the destruction can be massive, and the fragility of the world economy right now. I mean, there are countries literally teetering on the brink of collapse, especially in the Eurozone. I write about this often, Mohammed. You cut off the oil supply from the most important part of the world, and that could literally be a very quick breaking point. They could just go over, and if a few of them go over, they could take the rest of them with them. And I've written, and it's true, as goes Europe, so goes America, so goes China, so goes the world. I mean, we're talking about a very, very dangerous situation economically, besides militarily.
I agree completely. And alongside this, you see that the American government is in bed with some of the most horrific regimes in the world. I mean, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar. These are regimes that are not only completely despotic, they don't even have elections. In Saudi Arabia, women cannot drive. In Saudi Arabia, women cannot have independent bank accounts. And in these countries, their governments, they promote an extreme form of so-called Islam called Salafism. And what is interesting is that Salafism used to be a very small extremist sect decades ago. But since the Saudi ruling family is Salafist and they've aligned themselves with the Salafists, they've been promoting this ideology for their own self-interest. And because they're so wealthy, and the Qataris and so on, they're so wealthy, they have been able to, in some parts of the world, to even marginalize mainstream Islam. And thus you see the creation of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And now the Saudis, even in Libya, which, as you pointed out, was a pushover which lasted months, you see that many of the people who are gaining power in Libya are these very same Salafists. They used to be members of Al-Qaeda. Now, when you empower these people in Libya, or when you allow the Saudis and the Qataris, close American allies, to continue funding such groups in Egypt, in Morocco, in Algeria, in Syria, for their own self-interest, because what they want to do basically is to promote these groups to keep their own countries quiet. When this happens, you have many potential Afghanistans, you have many Al-Qaeda, you have many Taliban. And what country in the world can control all these, especially as we are going into economic crisis? So you have this, you have this situation where the Americans have aligned themselves with the worst despots. On the other hand, in Palestine, when the Israelis attack the Palestinians, when they attack civilian targets, when they destroy homes, and people in the Middle East see this, they become more angry with the United States. On the other hand, you have the Saudis funding these extremist organizations. All these coming together are potentially, I think, even it can be just as bad as a nuclear war in its own way. So what the United States is doing is that it is constantly using such allies against to pursue its policies, but it doesn't recognize that blowback, you know, the blowback that we saw in Afghanistan is not only potentially there, but I think that it could manifest itself in a more dramatic way than before.
I mean, it just imagine, Mohammed, as you're pointing out, for Afghanistan to replicate itself in other Middle East countries. And I don't think anybody doubts the ability of the Taliban, which is certainly no match for the U.S. military, to, let us say, hold America to a standoff for a whole decade, and it's now America's longest war, surpassing Vietnam. I mean, it's incredible. They have no nuclear weapons. They have no air force. They have none of the things that America has, and they've held off this military juggernaut for a whole decade. I have no doubt, Mohammed, they could do it for another decade. And you mentioned Israel-Palestine as well. My regular listeners know that is a crucial topic for me. I write about it constantly. I talk about Israeli crimes, and I know what's going on. And the fact that my country supports the worst of them, that alone, it absolutely should engender rage throughout the region. The injustice is so gross, and it's been going on for so many decades. And when the Palestinian government simply wants to become a full member of the UN, become a member of the various UN organizations like UNESCO, I mean, Israel almost reacts violently, threatens violence, cuts off funds, does all kinds of outrageous things, and the Obama administration goes along with all of this stuff. I can barely contain myself.
And even more extraordinary is how the United States is in the midst of all this, in the midst of a global economic crisis of of such proportions, and in the midst of such instability, is also pursuing extraordinarily hostile policies towards Iran. I mean, you have a drone over Iran brought down by the Iranian forces. This would constitute a provocation. This constitutes a provocation. If, for example, the Americans had downed an Iranian drone over American airspace, over American military installations in the United States, what would the U.S. response be? And this happens at a time when the United States is constantly saying all options are on the table. In other words, they're making constant threats against Iran. So, you know, the whole region is sort of at boiling point. And when, you know, the U.S. government commits such acts, and with such audacity, they don't apologize, they actually say that we're going to do it again. In fact, the Afghani president said, we don't want to be a part of this, but the Americans immediately, in response, said, we will continue with this policy. So not only do they not recognize Afghani sovereignty, they break international law. They say blatantly that they will continue with these provocations. And then when you have such a situation, how in the world do you expect Iran to even enter any form of dialogue with the United States? Because the Iranians feel that the American government is behaving in an irrational fashion. As you pointed out earlier, there is no evidence whatsoever that Iran is developing a nuclear weapon. Nothing at all. The statements, if anyone goes through the statements made by the IAEA, they have no decisive evidence at all. In fact, all the evidence goes back to a simple laptop. Almost all the evidence, the alleged evidence, goes back to a simple laptop, which the Americans stated that they obtained from Iranians, proving that Iran is building a nuclear weapon. The Iranians, and this is, I think, goes back to 2004, the Iranians told the IAEA that, okay, if this is a legitimate, if this is legitimate evidence, ask the Americans to submit the laptop to computer experts. They can be Japanese, they can be European, they can be independent computer experts to check the laptop byte by byte to see if this is authentic. The Americans refused. And that's why the previous chief of the IAEA refused to acknowledge that this is legitimate evidence. The new chief, if you go and look at the WikiLeaks documents, he's very much in the pockets of the Americans. And, of course, the board is dominated by Western countries. The recent statement is all based upon this laptop that the Americans refuse to have anyone analyze and to inspect. There was also another piece of evidence, because I said almost all the evidence goes, and that was that they could make the new statement claimed that there was a Russian scientist who was working on nuclear bombs, and he was in Iran years ago. It turns out that this Russian scientist was an expert in nano diamonds and had nothing to do with nuclear weapons, and he had left the country 11 years ago. So all the evidence is based upon this sort of information. If the Americans are using this to push Iran in a corner, to try to hurt Iran, and this only creates hostility among ordinary Iranians. When ordinary Iranians see that the Americans are sanctioning them, they're trying to hurt the Iranian economy, that means they're trying to hurt ordinary Iranians. So they're creating hostility among ordinary Iranians. They're creating a situation where the Iranian government feels that it's no use to talk to the Americans. And then you have this, the same sort of thing going on throughout the region. The region is at boiling point. And, and this along with the current crisis in Europe and the United States, all this together spells, enormous, trouble for the world.
Sure does, Mohammed. And after a decade of constant Middle East war and the previous decade of the 1990s, starting with the sanctions in summer of 1990 against Iraq, and then the Gulf War and the horrific decade of sanctions that killed so many people, so many Iranians. There were intermittent bombings going on by Clinton going on during that time, but it was mostly the sanctions that did the damage. And then another decade. It should be pretty obvious that the Arab Street and across Iran, there's just public rage against America, with one moment when it changed. Right after 9/11, where people around the world rallied to support America, there was no reason for them to do it, but they did anyway, and America blew it all. Whatever goodwill it had momentarily, it dissipated very fast, because within a few weeks, the war in Afghanistan began, and then 2003, the Iraq War, and it just goes on and on. I would imagine everyone across the region, Mohammed, has to imagine. Do they have us on their list? Are they going to attack us? Certainly the Iranians feel that way and the Syrians feel that way, but ordinary people in the region, I would think that they simply don't know. I mean, America is an out-of-control rogue machine, and they could end up attacking anyone.
Well, I think that another grievance is that people in the region understand that the Americans were never supportive of the uprisings. In other words, they supported the Tunisian dictator until the very end. They supported Mubarak till it was clear that he was going to be overthrown. They supported the Egyptian army until recently, and there's been a second revolution. And yet the American government and the mainstream media act as if they are advocates of freedom in the region. They continue to support despots in Yemen and Saudi Arabia. The United States government actually supported the invasion of Bahrain by Saudi Arabia a few months ago. Bahrain is effectively an occupied country now. And Obama, not only condoned this, but Obama and Clinton both supported the Saudi invasion and occupation of the country in order to quell public anger towards the dictatorship. So, the Americans are seen as deterring democracy and the American government. And you're quite right. After September the 11th, There was a lot of goodwill directed towards the United States.
Well, we are out of time.
Okay. It's sad that after September 11th, there was quite a bit of sympathy for the United States, despite its past policies. And the U.S. just threw this out the window. And Obama also threw away a lot of potential goodwill at the beginning of his presidency.
He sure did, absolutely. And we never got around to discussing the legitimate uprisings around the region and the fact that my government, the Obama administration, supports all the despots and simply doesn't care about the social injustice that these people live under. They support the brutes, and they don't support the people. Mohammed, this was a great session with you. I look forward to getting you back to talk about more about the region. Again, you're there, you know it, and it's a joy for me to have you on.
You're very kind, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Have
and again, to my listeners,
day.
Join us this weekend, of course, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Make it a regular habit.